You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, at with Zibby and Tracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello. Enjoy the show. Happy New Year, everyone. I hope you all had a great break. I wanted to let you know about something that I've been talking a lot about on social media at Zibby Owens, which is the hashtag 22in22 challenge. We are at Zibby Books. We are encouraging everybody, like all of you, to visit 22 bookstores in 2022. And we're going to provide a whole series of incentives for every 5 visits, and you'll be entered to win a $500 shopping spree, and you'll get fun things like bookmarks and all the rest. Plus, you'll be part of a great community of people all helping support bookstores, authors, and more. We're really, really excited about it. If you want to join, sign up. You just go to 22in22.net. That's 22in22.net and click I'm in and put your information. And then every time you go to a bookstore, you just quickly go back on the site and click log a bookstore visit. And then we'll be keeping track and we'll be following up with all of your different achievements and awards and everything. So please sign up, spread the word. 22in22, get your friends to join and start visiting bookstores, and it'll be really fun and exciting. So here's to a wonderful 2022. I'm so excited that you're listening to my podcast and doing all the fun things that I have been trying to bring into the world. So here we go, 2022. Hashtag 22in22. Michael Tubbs is the author of The Deeper the Roots, a memoir of hope and home. At the age of 26, Michael D. Tubbs became the youngest mayor of any major city in American history. As mayor, he was lauded for his leadership and innovation. Under his stewardship, Stockton was named an All-American City in 2017 and 18, saw a 40% drop in homicides in 2018 and 19, led the state of California in the decline of officer-involved shootings in 2019, was named the second most fiscally healthy city in California and one of the top most fiscally healthy cities in the nation, and was featured in an HBO documentary, Stockton on My Mind. Oh, maybe I should watch that. Tubbs raised over $40 million to create the Stockton Scholars, a universal scholarship and mentorship program for Stockton students. He is the founder and chair of mayors for A Guaranteed Income. Tubbs has been named a fellow at the Harvard Institute of Politics and the MIT Media Lab, a member of Fortune's Top 40 Under 40, a Forbes 30 Under 30, All-Star alumni, the Most Valuable Mayor by the Nation, the 2021 Civic Leadership Award winner from the King Center, and 2019 New Frontier Award winner from JFK Library. Before taking the helm as mayor, he served as council member for the city of Stockton, District 6, was a high school educator, and a fellow for the Stanford Design School and the Emerson Collective. The author of the memoir, The Deeper the Roots, Tubbs currently serves as the special advisor to California Governor Gavin Newsom for economic mobility and is the founder of End Poverty in California, EPIC EPIC. Welcome, Michael. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss The Deeper the Roots, a memoir of hope and home. Amazing.
Thank you so much for having me.
I know. We were just saying your wife was on this podcast. Anna Malika Tubbs was on this podcast about a year ago. And I feel like maybe you're the only two people who have been married who have both been on the show. I'm going to rack my brain and see if I'm wrong. But I think you win that award.
Oh, that's incredible. I think we were talking about this last night. Like, maybe, I don't know if they've had any other husband-wife duos. Come on.
I guess you get you win a double date with my husband and me if you ever want it.
Oh, we're so in.
We're always up for that. Okay. Would you mind telling listeners about your beautiful memoir? I was so moved by so much of this. And well, why don't you start and discuss sort of how you decided to even write a memoir? And, you know, I really want to hear more about your essay for Alice Walker and how that was the first time that you shared your feelings publicly for this essay contest and how that really got you to write for the rest of your life, essentially.
Yeah, well, growing up, I was such a bookworm. I particularly loved two genres of books. One was sort of coming-of-age memoirs, folks who are adolescents coming to adults. And oftentimes written by Black men, but I also love, like, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, by Judy Blume. I just love reading about people growing up as I was growing up. I found that to be fascinating. And then I also was interested sort of in political biographies or biographies of leaders or memoirs by leaders about like the choices they made, about like the messiness of making change happen, about what it meant to lead. So those two things have always been North Stars. And I remember thinking like people do when they read books, like, oh, one day it would be cool if I had something to say that could be like this for somebody else. And then when I became mayor, I was elected on the same day that President Trump was elected. So a lot of people thought there was an interesting commentary on America, the fact that the country could do both things on the same night. And what does that mean? What does that suggest? And how do we move forward? But I was busy being mayor. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And I just took a long time. And then finally, with the birth of our son, Malachi, I realized we need money for childcare. I wrote this book, I'll have a little bit of money for childcare. But in writing it, it just became so apparent that the moment we were in was so unique that I wanted to have a timestamp to mark it so that it's not sort of colored by ambition of a grander office. It's not colored by sort of just how you get, as sometimes as you get older, you become more jaded and more cynical and less. I just want to, in this moment, let's write it. So that's the long answer to why the book. And the first the outline of the book I wrote in high school and for Alice Walker's essay contest. And it was, I literally did that. You know, you could tell I'm just like very pragmatic. I did that essay contest, not because I wanted to be Alice Walker, but because I wanted to get an A in drama. And it was extra credit. I needed the extra credit to get the A. So I said, okay, I'll write this essay. And the essay prompt was, how did you change your own life, building on the themes of The Color Purple? And I knew it was college admissions time as well. So I said, well, maybe I could workshop this and this could be my college essay. So let me just knock it out now, get some feedback. So I wrote about both my mother and my father. And I mean, everyone knew my mom was young because she looks young, but no one knew she was like literally in high school, like the age I wrote the essay when she had me. And then people would always ask me about my dad, but I would act like I didn't hear them. I would make up lies. And so the first time I told, like, oh, my father's actually been incarcerated. And this is sort of what drives me. And this is what I've learned from both of them. And I won the essay contest. And I was just shocked with how moved people were by sort of the story, the essay. And I was like, it's just life. Like, who cares? Because also growing up, my mom was very adamant about, you don't need to tell people your business or our business. Like, no one cares. It's not important. You just do a good job. So I was shocked when I would get, like, literally people were sending me scholarship checks in the mail, like individuals. People were asking me to come talk to their juvenile jail. Like, it was just crazy. And I was like, all because I wrote this essay. And that was a marker or a spark to your point around the importance of storytelling, the importance of narrative. And also now that I have a little bit of a platform, and you do this so beautifully, the story of using your platform to lift other people up and give other voices the chance. Because, I mean, Alice Walker is Alice Walker. So not only was it a good essay, but the fact that Alice Walker said, this essay embodies the themes of my book, it really just changed the trajectory of not to be hyperbolic, but like the rest of my life was changed from that high school essay contest.
Well, if anybody sends you a check after listening to this podcast,
I'll split it. I know.
We'll split it. I'm kidding. You can have it. It's fine. Wow. Well, you know, there were so many moments in your story that were just, I can't stop thinking about them. So one of them was when you went to visit your father in prison for the first time and you saw him for the first time and you thought you had an idea in your head of what he would look like. And when you met him, you were like, he didn't really look like that. Looked a little bit, you know, younger, older, whatever, but he looked a little like me. And I feel like in a movie that there would have been like a screen, you know, like it would have faded to black when you said that line. Cause like, for me, I had to like take a pause and like you looking at him, it was such a poignant moment and I didn't do it justice here, by the way I described it, but just the reckoning. And also, you know, when you had been tutoring, that was also crazy. When you were tutoring the prison guard's son who was of your dad, that was so nuts. And then knowing that and you meeting him, oh my gosh, tell me a little bit more.
Yeah, well, I actually had forgot about that prison guard moment until I was writing. And his son was one of my best friends. So I hung out with this kid all the time. We were always together. We played basketball together. I would go support him on his traveling basketball team. His mom loved me. So I was at their house literally every weekend.
Crazy.
And his mom really loved me. And his dad was cool, but he was always just looking at me. And particularly being one of the few Black students at my all-white school, I was kind of used to people looking at me. But so I was just like, did I do something? What's wrong? And finally, my friend asked his dad, and his dad was like, well, there's a Michael Tubbs that is on the block that I police. And he's like, I'm just keep looking at him like, this kid that's tutoring my son and so well-mannered, and how can he be related to someone inside the prison? And then, so my friend told me this, and he's like, yeah, there's like some dude, Michael Tubbs, in his prison that he's like trying to figure out, is he related to you? And I remember just feeling like my breath was taken away. I'm like 12, 13 years old. I was like, huh? I remember feeling like very proud, but also very sad. Like, wow, like my friend's dad knows my dad better than me. And wow, like, but also very proud. Like, wow, I'm tutoring his son in math. Like, I felt really good about that. And then later I end up visiting my father. And I mean, when you're young and you have a vivid imagination, particularly when something's gone, that gives you the space to dream. So I just dreamed my dad was like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, he's in prison, so he's super buff and he's strong and he's gonna, but I had no idea what, never thought what he looked like physically. I thought he's this big, strong, intimidating dude. And then when I saw him, he was about my age now, like 31 years old. So he looked really young. Looked a little bit tired. But the biggest thing, I was like, oh my gosh, like I look like, like he looks like me. And I didn't, which is just dumb. Like, of course you look like your parents. You came from somewhere. But because he wasn't there, there was no constant reflection on that. So when I saw him, I was just like, oh my gosh, he looks like me. And then I think one of the things I took away from that meeting was like, this could be me. Like this is it's not some abstract notion. Like literally there's a mirror image of you in a place like this. So how do you make sure that doesn't happen? And that became sort of a huge motivation, a great strength, but also a great weakness in terms of being just laser focused, hyper-determined, like pit bull, lock jaws on doing everything possible to make sure I was successful, make sure I did everything right, make sure I was able to do better than my parents.
Well, I also feel like you had your mother there making sure that that was going to happen.
I think sort of the determination, if not innate, it was definitely a learned survival defense because you can't live with my mom and not do well. You're born determined or she's going to make you determined.
Yeah. I think I need to parent a little bit more like your mom, I swear. I mean,
me too.
I also loved how you always said how wherever you were, even when you were in the temporary housing and all you had was like a block of cheese from the state or something to eat, your mother was so classy, right? She was always just like, this is where we are now. This is not where we're meant to be. Like, this is not where you're going to be. And this is just, don't make this about who you are. This is just where we happen to be. I feel like there's such a huge distinction there and that you sort of isolated yourselves against the neighborhood and just like did your thing and knew you were just passing through.
Yeah, I credit her for sort of just a vision that was different and just refusing to be defined by like very adverse circumstances and never being comfortable, even if it was like, this is good enough for me, this won't be good enough for you. And she just sent so many signals, like, you don't belong here. Like, this is not, like, you're going to be, there's more for you. And also that just because these things happen, we're still going to live with dignity. Like, yes, we could be upset, rightfully so. Yes, we could be angry, and we should be, but you're not just going to sit in there. Like living in the projects, we're going to like the best private school. this thing she did, like she just made sure that I understood I had worth and I had value. And you don't recognize that when you're a kid. And it wasn't until I really sat down and wrote this book and thought about like, wow, mom and my grandma and aunt, you guys were brilliant in making sure we did not internalize our environment.
Yeah.
And that we did not internalize sort of the things that were bad, but that you just kept telling us like, no, this is where we are. But where you're going is dependent on other, like you have some agency in how that goes. And even though now in my current work, I'm always talking about policy, 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 I'm so thankful that as a child, when I had no say over policy, my mom really instilled in me agency. Mm-hmm. Like, until you can make the change, how do we navigate and get through it?
Interesting. Yeah, and that was one thing you said your father didn't. He was like a victim of the system.
Yeah.
Like at home, it was all about agency. And here it was like resignation. But, you know, as I was reading your book, and obviously there's like a spoiler, which is we all know you become the mayor, which is like amazing. But I try not to think about it while I was reading and being like, what's going to happen to this guy? Who knows? So I'm watching you grow up and obviously you're so bright. And it was so interesting how, you know, you were sort of straddled the two different social circles. And when you were in the International Baccalaureate program, how you had to like make friends across both lines. And I was like, okay, great. He's like super smart. I totally get it. Like, no matter what, like this bookworm really smart. But then when you filed some sort of like civil rights lawsuit against your teacher, I was like, okay, here's where this guy differs from anyone else, right? It would never in a million years occur to me to file a lawsuit or like to take things to that level. And I was like, this is like, I don't know. That seemed to me the moment that really set you apart. Tell that story.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with J. McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have J. McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through J. McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to J. McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at J. McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. J. McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, J. McLaughlin. Thanks so much. Hey, grownups. The Cat in the Hat cast is a new podcast from Wondery, perfect for the whole family. Join the Cat in the Hat and your favorite Dr. Seuss characters as they get whisked away on a new adventure every week. Fish dreams of creating his very own polite and quiet podcast. That is, until he gets a surprise visit to his Fishbowl podcast studio from the Cat in the Hat himself, and it becomes very clear that the cat has other plans for the podcast, and those plans are the opposite of quiet. The cat may be disruptive, but it turns out he's also a great help to get Fish out of all kinds of predicaments. Bursting with music, silliness, and rhymes, the Cat in the Hat cast encourages us all to find fun that is funny in every episode. So sing along to new favorite songs, try your luck at Titanic tongue twisters, have some fun with wondrous wordplay, and most importantly, bring your family along for all of the adventures in the Cat in the Hat cast. Follow the Cat in the Hat cast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to the Cat in the Hat cast ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Wondery Kids Plus in Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, I did well in school in spite of most of my teachers, not because of. And again, now as a 31-year-old, as an educator, spent years teaching students, I get how I could have been annoying. Like, I was very energetic. I was very, like, all the things people like about me now, I was really the same way at, like, 13 years old, but I wasn't the mayor. So just like, who, like, why do you think? So I had so much energy. I always wanted to do group projects. If I was done, I wanted to walk and talk to my classmates. If I disagreed, I would raise my hand. And I get why I was annoying for some teachers, but I don't agree with this, like, kicking me out every day. And literally, it's no exaggeration. Every single day, I was kicked out of at least one class. And luckily, I like school because I think about sort of what message that sends. Like, every day you show up excited for class and, like, get out, like, you don't belong here. But I'm glad I had those other messages from home and from church. I'm like, no, you're fine. We'll figure out how to make this work. And then one teacher in particular was my high school biology teacher, who was a former officer. And it was weird because, like, the IB program had this, like, haughtiness to it where we were better, smarter, more worthy of resources and support than all the other kids in the school. And that always bothered me. And he would say things like, every class, like, well, those kids outside, like, there was noise outside. Well, those kids are going to pump your gas one day. Or those kids are on the highway to prison. And it's things like that. And we just didn't, he was a bully. Like, he had, like, this helmet called the retard helmet. Where if you asked a question he thought was dumb or said a statement he thought was dumb, you would have to write the quote and put it on the helmet. And I mean, as a 15-year-old, 6-year-old, I think it's funny, but now as an adult, that's abuse. Like, you're making the classroom an unsafe environment for inquiry. Yeah. Like, what? Like, you'd be terrified to ask a question about the college-level biology we were learning because you didn't want to be on the retard helmet. And you would have to wear it in class, and he'll take a picture of you, and it says, like, retard. Like think about how violent that is, right?
I would never, I would never speak. I was shy enough to begin with. Like if that was one of the risks, there's no, I wouldn't, you wouldn't know what my voice even sounded like ever.
It's crazy. So we, and then I noticed every time things would be normal, but every quarter around the end of the quarter, all of a sudden there'd be zeros. I'm like, no, I did that. Right. But so it got to the point where I would literally photocopy my work before I turned it in. So if it was a zero, I'd be like, oh no, it's right here. That's how crazy it got. Or a lot of our tests were based on drawing. And I can't draw. Like, I don't know if there's a learning difference or something. I literally have never been able to draw well, like at all. So I would draw things and label it correctly, and it'd be half the test, and he'll give like zero. Looks nothing like the heart. But it's like, it's in an art class. And why not give us the heart so we can just label the things if that's what you want us to get to? But it was literally about the quality of my drawings, right? And he was really upset when I got into Stanford, and he told everyone that would listen to him that I played my black card to get into Stanford, or I won a Coca-Cola scholarship. And he said, well, Michael gets scholarships because he's the color of the drink. And he would say that to my classmates, right? Who didn't get into Stanford, like building resentment and anger and vitriol towards me. So longer story short, towards the end, like my grade went from like a B to a D. And you can get rescinded from Stanford for that. So to your point, I had to think about, so what could I do to make sure that I wasn't rescinded, mm-hmm. and to also signal to Stanford, like I'm not making this up. It's not like some senioritis stuff. This is like real like craziness. So I was like, you know what? I have to file a formal complaint. So I wrote the complaint. I gave it to the NAACP. We met with the superintendent. They did an investigation. And starting that next year, he hasn't taught at that high school since. Like, he's not allowed to teach in our high schools. He still teaches community college. And my admissions officer called me. And this was all like the day before graduation too. Like all this is happening the day before graduation. You're supposed to be so excited. I'm like nervous as hell. Like what, like, am I going to go to college? Like, is everyone going to think I'm a failure? Like, what is he going to win? And my admissions officer called me crying. It was like, thank you for this. I'm so sorry you went through this. And she said, I'm glad you did this, because I needed proof or evidence. Like, this is not just a case of senioritis. So I'm glad you had the mind to do this. And with all that said, and I should have mentioned this in the book, I started Stanford on academic probation because of that class. I started Stanford and it was like, you have to get a 3.0 your first quarter because of that. And the last thing I'll say, because I'm waxing poetic now, is that it was so frustrating because even in talking with the superintendent who agreed with my claims, he said, I can't make him change your grade. And I'm just like, wait, what? He's like, I legally cannot tell him or make him change your grade. And for me, it was just an example of how power operates and how sort of we have all types of people with all types of control over people's futures with like unchecked power, like veto power. Mm-hmm. And that's to your point, I became really interested in like, how do we change that? Or how do we at least change some of the people who have the power so it operates in a way that's in everyone's best interest? So that was longer than the book. But you're the first one to ask about that episode. I've done like 20
interviews.
That's
why I'm talking to you. I love hearing this. I like the backstory. I read the book. Like, I like the extra stuff. This is like the bonus material. I'm like, I've made it through the movie and now I get the extra clip or something. Anyway, well, hats off to you because that took, I mean, obviously you're brilliant, but that took real brilliance to go that route. And, you know, God, it just like makes me so depressed to think about all the teachers who do this with no checks and balances ever. And the kids who have been affected by teachers like that, even right this second. So yeah. Somebody's sitting in a classroom and there's some guy who's just belittling a student. And, you know, as I've done all these podcasts, like, honestly, the most important thing to becoming a writer I've found, well, one of them is if somebody acknowledges your talent. Like, look at you and Alice Walker. Yeah. You just need one person, you need one adult to say, hey, you're a good writer, you have talent. And then that's like enough. But well, if you don't have anyone, you know.
Well, there's all this research that about how students in particular rise to the expectations of those in authority, mm-hmm. whether it's a parent, whether it's a teacher. There's like the study done with teachers that all the students came in at equal level. And the teachers were told before the year that this half of the class was advanced, this half of the class was not advanced. At the end of the year, the side of the class that was said that she was told was the teacher was told was advanced actually became advanced. And the side of the class that wasn't advanced or that was average became below average because they were told they were below average. And it was because all these, like, the expectations, the way they were challenged, the way they talk, like, it's wild. So there's so much authority adults have. And I think a big part of the book is illustrating, to your point about Alice Walker and other, like, the women in my church would give me books.
Yeah.
How one adult, so nice. While we work to change a system, how one adult can make a world of difference, that we all have a role to play in identifying, mentoring, and supporting the young people in our communities who we have no idea who they can be, with just a little bit of love and a little bit of support.
Wow. Well, I don't want you to have to go into your whole political philosophy and, you know, all of that, but how, like, what are you doing for education then with all of this background?
Yeah, so my master's actually is in education policy. So before I ran for city council, I thought I was going to be a superintendent. I wanted to be a superintendent of a school district, and I wanted to open, like, a boarding school in Stockton. That was, like, my dream. And maybe I have a lot of time, so maybe eventually that will happen. And when I was mayor, I started a program called Stockton Scholars. That's still going on. I'm still the chair of it, where every single student from our school districts who graduates with just a 2.0 or higher is guaranteed a scholarship to community college, trade school, or four-year school. And then on top of that, we have a bunch of, like, sort of service learning placements, so that when they're in college, they can come back and serve as reading coaches or math tutors and stuff within our school system. And then I kind of wrote this book I used to run a book club when I was on city council. And I wrote this book as a way to sort of hopefully get students like me who are in IB and also students who weren't in IB, like, a real flesh and blood story of a politician that's closer to their age, of a politician who sort of make feel more accessible, because you're, like, you're a local politician, not like a senator or president. So I hope that over the next year or two, I can have a lot of conversation with schools and groups about sort of the book, and about sort of some of the lessons in there. And I hope that everyone, but particularly young people, read it and find inspiration, find solace. But I think the most important thing for me is for them to read it and find like, oh, I'm not crazy. Like, oh, like I should be upset about the things that aren't just. Or, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, this is hard, but it's possible. Or, oh, wow. Like, I could do it. Right. And that's my biggest prayer.
Wow. Well, I think it's also inspiring because both you and, was it your dad originally, they both called you the mayor, right, of your schools, right? You, like, held court at the table and you were like, I want everybody to know I'm cool. Even if they're not my friends. Sorry to even try to say that. But anyway.
But that was beautiful.
Quoting, I was just quoting, you know, thank you.
No, it fit. Like, you had the inflection right too. I appreciate it.
Okay, good. But the just the magic part of the story is that then you actually do that. Right. So for all those people who have this skill, right, the social skill and the intellectual abilities and all of it, like, that can all, you don't have to just be the mayor of your seventh grade, right? You can actually be the mayor. So I don't know. I think that's also really exciting too, because it feels like really impossible to make a difference and to be in politics, or maybe, you know, it gets a bad rap of what you have to sacrifice to be in politics. So anyway. That's another thing that I found very inspiring. Anyway, last question for you, because I feel like I could talk all day, but maybe we'll do that over dinner with, you know, our staff.
Yeah, I'm telling you, we are so down.
What advice would you have for aspiring authors?
Writing is so hard, and particularly for someone who writing is not their, like, dated. Like, my wife has such a discipline about it. So we're writing our books at the same time. I actually got my deal 2 years before her, and her book was still out the year before, while doing her PhD and while being pregnant and planning a wedding and all this other crap. But she has a discipline about it where every day she would write for 2 hours. And I'm just not disciplined in that way. So it's like, I have to be in the mood. I have to have inspiration. I have to be really focused. Or I have to be facing a tough deadline, or I have to need, like, childcare. Like, it has to be very tangible. But I would tell authors that, for me, the guiding light was, I think it was a Maya Angelou quote that said, there's, and I'm going to mess it up, but basically it's like, there's no worse burden than a story that has yet to be untold, or to have a story in you that you haven't told. And I think that was a real guiding light. Like, oh, wow. Even if no one else reads this, like, this is important for me. Like, this, there's something, I have something to say. And then number two, I would say you have to be authentic. I know, so I had really great editors, but even in the editing process, there's, like, some things that they need over explain, or some things I don't know. And it was like, I have to be true and authentic. So I think that's part of it. And then number three, you're never done. Like, I cringe sometimes when I have to read. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I should have added this, or man, I forgot this story. And I think that's the beauty of writing, it's iterative. So even when your book is finished, it's only just starting. And the best part is when you get to talk to other people about what resonated with them or what they connect with or what they thought. And the last thing I'll say is, I remember in high school, we used to do all this literary analysis. We'd always talk about like what the author meant. And I always wondered, are authors really that intentional and think of all these themes and all these motifs?
That's exactly what I was thinking in English class. I'm like, I like to write. I don't put any of this stuff in my writing.
There's some themes I did intentionally, but some of the stuff people are coming up with, I'm like, wow, that's it. I didn't think of that, but that's brilliant. I wish I had, because that makes a lot of sense.
That's so funny. I know. I was like, I don't understand why we're analyzing things this way. I promise you, the author didn't mean to do that. That didn't go over well. No. I'm like, my teacher's like, no. And anyway, so I'm delighted to hear you say that, but I'm glad. Yeah. Sometimes it's easy to just extrapolate after the fact. But anyway, all right, Michael, thank you so much. This has been so fun. Thank you for sharing your story. And oh my gosh, you're so young. I mean, I'm only 45, but I'll pretend that I'm your older and wiser person.
You are.
I cannot wait to see all the stuff that you do in the world and all the other books that might come out and just the good work you're going to do. So go forth and conquer. Well,
thank you for having me. And can't wait to our double date.
Can't wait. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
One-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.